Hey, listener, lean in close. I've got something that's going to change your life. It's modern, scientific, endorsed by experts. It's basically a miracle. It will give you energy, vitality, and a healthy glow. What's the catch, you say? Oh, no biggie. It's, you know, just a little radioactive.
History is messy,
weird, wild, anything but boring.
We're Rainy Day Rabbit Holes,
exploring the unhinged side of history, politics, and culture.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
Welcome back to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes. I'm your host, Shay. Jody is still on a break, so you're hanging out with me today. But I'm not alone. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, and we are going to be diving into the radium craze of the early 20th century, a time when radiation wasn't safely secured behind feet of steel and government regulations, but proudly displayed as a selling point. Today, I am joined by the host of Radiant Radium, the curator of the Radium YouTube channel and Instagram page. In his videos, Radiant Radium showcases his fascinating collection of radioactive household products, objects that were once proudly used in kitchens, bathrooms, and bedrooms across the country and around the world. And here's the crazy thing. Some of these objects are still floating around in antique stores and estate sales today. In this episode, we're going to explore some of the most bonkers radium products ever sold, how the public was convinced they were safe, and why the lessons of the radium era still matter, especially now. Welcome, Radiant Radium.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So I came across your Instagram page a couple of weeks ago and was immediately intrigued. I just knew that I had to talk to you. And we can get into it later, but for your own safety and peace of mind, you will remain anonymous.
Say, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
But what we can say about you is that you are passionate about history, right?
Absolutely. For quite a while, actually, my grandfather was a bottle digger who dug up bottles from the Old West. He actually would dig up outhouses and look for these old bottles. And he just really passed this, you know, historian angle on to me.
That's awesome. Give us a little bit of history about your background as a collector. So it sounds like it started with your grandfather with this passion for bottles. So did you start with bottles as well?
So kind of. It's really interesting because he was so focused on the Wild West. That was his thing. Okay. He was very focused on, you know, beer bottles and whiskey bottles and the drunkenness of the Wild West. And, you know, I used to help him with, he actually owned an antique store and he had quite the collection of antiques.
Oh, cool.
And so he would teach me about all these different things. And my first kind of introduction into quackery was he had somebody bring in to his antique store one of those old ultraviolet ray machines, you know, these like wand devices that had ultraviolet electricity in them. And they were supposed to, you know, stimulate blood flow if you rubbed it across your hand, if you had carpal tunnel, those types of things.
Okay.
You know, just straight up lies and quackery. And was just fascinated at the fact that the medical industry at the time, in a lot of ways, supported so much of this. And it was just kind of a free-for-all. And so just it kind of started there and then transitioned into the radioactive stuff actually much later in life, even though I've always had a fascination with history.
So do you have collections of things other than radioactive products?
Not much, honestly. I do have some bottles, a lot of the stuff from, you know, the late 1800s. But my primary focus, especially these days and where the majority of my money goes, unfortunately, is the radioactivity.
So beyond this wand that kind of sparked your interest, as it were, where and when did you discover your first radioactive antique?
So I actually, years ago, had been told that there was this fascination with radiation even before the atomic age. So we're talking probably, 10, 15 years ago, when I first learned that aside from the atomic age, you know, after the bombs, there was a pre kind of nuclear fascination with health products. And I first learned about some of it, actually, with things like radium suppositories, of all things, like just the most random off-the-wall things that you could ever think they would use in quackery. And so it was an interest, and it was something that at that time I never thought was necessarily obtainable in terms of collecting, right? Collecting or documenting, your first thought when you hear about that stuff is either it's all long gone or it's in museums or it's, you know, practically unobtainable for somebody of, you know, civilian stature, I guess you could say.
When did you discover, like, you're in an antique store and you find something that you're like, oh my God, did you know what you were holding? Like, what was the first thing? Was it the suppositories you found, one of the tins or something?
Obviously
not a suppository.
Luckily, I haven't come across any suppositories yet, though I would love them for my collection. So the first actual piece that I came across that wasn't even necessarily radioactive quackery, but kind of led straight into it, like many people, is uranium glass. Mm. You know, uranium glass is commonly found everywhere in different antique stores and multitudes of garage sales, estate sales, that type of thing. But coming across it and thinking to myself, you know, gosh, it's really interesting that of all things they would use, you know, a uranium to colorize this glass. And from there, it went into kind of radium painted clocks. Not a lot of people realize that, yeah, radium paint was used to, you know, luminesce the clocks back in the day for the glow in the dark properties. And there was, I kid you not, hundreds of millions of them made. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the largest company, West Clocks, had celebrated like their 100 millionth clock back in, like, I want to say the like 40s or 50s, somewhere along those lines. So there's millions of them out there. And that was fascinating, but it wasn't really until I came across a Revigator, which is the uranium-lined water drinking vessel. And funny enough, it popped up on Facebook Marketplace. Mm. And it was one of those things where it was a couple hours away from me, but I was so fascinated with the idea of it and kind of the danger and the, you know, impracticality of it that I was like, you know what, I'm going to pick it up. And it was a couple hundred bucks. It was a little steep at the time, but I ended up driving out there, picking it up, and just kind of fell in love with it ever since. And that was, you know, it's kind of funny because I've amassed quite a collection in only a little over a year or so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You found something that you're passionate about and dove right in.
Yes. I dove right off the deep end. That's for sure.
Definitely fell down a rabbit hole on that one. So when did the collecting turn into historical research for you?
So funny enough, after getting that Revigator, I was just, you know, so excited about it, a little scared of it, if I'm being honest, you know, having a radioactive device. My wife especially wasn't happy. But after trying to do some more research in it and find out just anything I could about it, it was actually going onto the internet and going into these rabbit holes of like the ORAU, the Oak Ridge Associated University's website, and learning about these devices, to where I was like, you know what, there's information out there, but there's not quite enough. There's a lot of surface level research that I, you know, I appreciate these groups for doing, but there was also such a personal touch missing behind like the creator and what his life was like and what, you know, led him to think this way. And so that's something that really triggered it for me. And then it became kind of every piece that I came across, I just had to learn more and more and more.
So you're learning the stories of these pieces and clicking them all together. So all this research now is leading you down another path, right?
Yes, it's quite wild, actually. And, you know, when you look online and you look at the history of some of these pieces, there's actually so much misinformation out there. And it's not necessarily because folks are trying to spread misinformation, but more so the fact that folks just don't quite have enough knowledge behind it. Mm. There's so much history that was hidden and buried and not talked about because, let's be real, it's kind of an embarrassing thing to think about that just 100 years ago. It may seem like a long time ago, but it really wasn't, to be ingesting radioactive materials.
Right. Yeah. That was our grandparents.
Yeah.
Ingesting that
exactly.
Material.
Exactly. And so it's something that has become really a passion project of mine to bring so much more of that information out. And that has brought me into the rabbit hole of traveling across the United States to locate pieces and talk to folks and just do as much research as I can. Stuff that I think the internet is very helpful with these days. But at the same time, it's like you really sometimes just have to get I like to say, kind of deep in the dirt and actually, you know, go places and meet people and find that stuff out.
Absolutely. And so all of this research is now leading to a book, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually writing a book at the moment. It's called There's Something in the Water.
I love that and title. That's so good. it's kind of scary a little bit.
Yes.
I like it.
And it's primarily going to explore what I call the Thomas radium craze. So that's going to be the kind of the mid 1910s up until about 1932 or so. And we'll get into it. There's so much radium quackery, including stuff that never even included radioactive materials. But this specific period is primarily focused on like the Revigator, the water, you know, vessels, mm-hmm. the radioactive patent medicine, those types of things. But the reason it's Thomas is the gentleman who created the Revigator. His name was Ralph Thomas. And it was kind of, I like to blame him.
If we have to point to anyone, I wonder how radioactive his bones are today.
Oh, you know, it's very interesting. And one of the coolest things that I came across, and it's going to all be in this book, hoping to release in 2027, there's no documented pictures of Ralph Thomas. Oh. And he has been dead. So this is how deep and how difficult this has been. He's been dead since 1932.
Okay.
So he's been gone. We're coming up on 100 years in just a few short years. And when you're that far, far back gone, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of information to dig up easily accessible unless I'm quite literally meeting with people who were a cousin of a friend, you know,
right.
It's extremely difficult. But this last year, I actually connected with his family.
Amazing.
And
that's incredible.
Absolutely wild. And let me tell you, they did not know who he was.
maybe for one
reason or another, but
right.
I'll never forget calling him up. And, you know, we had done, my brother helps me with a lot of this research, and we had pulled a lot of, you know, public records, marriage certificates, death certificates, these types of things. And we found the family, and I ended up calling, I believe would have been his great nephew. And I asked him, do you know Ralph Thomas? And nope, no idea who that is. Sorry. My grandma's last name was Thomas, but I don't know, you know, anybody by that name. And we ended the call. He called me back about, I want to say 2 to 3 weeks later. And he goes, you know, I kind of thought you were, he essentially, like, I was scamming, you know, he took it as caution,
sure.
in a sense. And then he ended up going through some old family storage and found an envelope marked Thomas. And he opened it up, and he actually texted me the first known picture of Ralph Thomas. And
that's so exciting. I love that.
I have like 5 or 6 that I have ready to document for the book, wedding photos, all this cool stuff.
And oh my God, this is so cool.
It's wild. 'Cause even, you know, Oak Ridge Associated Universities, their radiation department, they are the like go-to, the know-how for all of this stuff. And unfortunately, when I had talked to Dr. Paul Frame, who curated that collection and kind of oversaw that department, he had never seen Ralph Thomas, and he had never connected with family either. So this is, it's pretty special.
This is really great. Oh my gosh. Now I'm very excited for this book. So, you know, I know that our listeners are going to be excited to hear about the radium products. But before we get started, let's talk a little bit about legality of owning these radioactive antiques. You know, people want to know, is it actually legal to collect these items?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So in 2007, the NRC, they actually provided a kind of general license to folks who were interested in collecting these radioactive antiques. And so there are essentially exemptions for these types of antiques, meaning the like the emanators, the cones, which we'll talk about, which kind of blew my account up, no pun intended. the jars, the radium, what do you call it? Like the toothpaste things, all these different things are actually covered under this general license. Now, I'm kind of a rare breed of collector. And so this is a good thing for the viewers. I'm so invested in the historical aspect of it. There are collectors who enjoy these items, but they also just enjoy radioactivity in general. Now, I enjoy radioactivity, but I'm not collecting just for that.
let's put a... Because when you say I enjoy radioactivity, it sounds like you like to like sit around and get irradiated, meaning you enjoy the subject of radioactivity.
I enjoy the subject. My viewers, the ones who aren't quite as interested, may think that I just bathe in radioactivity daily.
I mean, maybe when you enter your collection room a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. But it's one of those things to where these NRC limits, for example, for this collecting and this legality, covers all my stuff, but a lot of the same collectors want the stuff that is so hot radioactivity wise that it falls outside of that limit. So for anyone who's interested and potentially, you know, comes across radium antiques, realistically, as long as it's an antique, it's intact, it's you know, not leaking or anything like that, they are considered legal and safe to own. Just don't use them for their intended purpose. And that's the government's, you know, official position on it today.
And we'll talk about that more. And just for our listeners, the NRC is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, so a government agency. And now, how about, is there a difference between collecting these items or selling them? I mean, are you allowed to sell these items or is that restricted?
So technically, I'm allowed to sell them under this general license. And when I say general license, I mean, it's quite literally that you just kind of print it out and agree to the terms.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's not anything you have to apply for. Now, there becomes the issue of, if I am selling it, how is it getting to the buyer? Mm. You know, that type of situation. So for me personally, I don't typically sell any of the antiques. Maybe I'll, you know, gift one to a friend here or there, but I find a lot of gray area when it comes to selling something like that, because either somebody may not understand the safety requirements of it, or maybe they're interested in using it for a reason they shouldn't be. Mm. So legal, but I kind of look at it as a gray area personally.
Sure. And what about disposing of them? Are there rules about if let's say one of your water jug falls, shatters into a million pieces, and now you have to dispose of it? Are there special regulations about how you have to dispose of these items?
So depending on your state and location, a lot of times what you would want to do is actually contact like a local government agency, so that way they can, you know, come and handle it safely. Okay. Now, what I'll be completely honest about is most of these government agencies and most of the people of today have no idea what to do because there's not really training for it. And there's not a lot of understanding of it. There's more misunderstanding than anything, which, as you can guess, breeds fear. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes this whole other rabbit hole we could jump down into. But yeah, typically you would want to contact your like local environmental agency or your public health department and see what recommendations they have for you.
So let's get on to then a little bit about the dangers of having a collection like this. As you mentioned before, as long as they're safely handled and not used for their intended purposes, they're generally rather safe. But I do see in your videos with some of these products, you do use gloves while handling them. Is that recommended when, I mean, and I guess it depends on the product, like uranium glass, I'm sure as long as you're not eating or drinking off of it, it's fine to have it in your cabinet and dust it once in a while and don't lick it to clean it. But I see like the caps from the patent medicine, you generally seem to hold those and those seem highly radioactive. So tell me about safety of owning and handling these products.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, when it comes to safe storage and handling, there's a couple things you need to consider, which is going to be time, distance, and shielding. So realistically, the videos, let's be real, sometimes they look a little scary. They probably look a lot scarier than they actually are. So for example, you just want to not expose yourself unnecessarily as much as you can. So for example, if you're going to have a collection, say even half the size of mine, you're not going to want to have it in the same room. You're not going to want to sleep with it. You're not going to,
you don't know, display it around your headboard.
Exactly. Exactly. It's, you know, are adverse effects going to happen even right away? Probably not, but it's just unnecessary radiation.
Right. The potential and for so, long-term problems is small, but there.
Exactly. And so one of the biggest concerns that you can have with a collection like this actually comes from radium itself. So radium decays into radon gas, and radon gas is the second leading cause of lung cancer in the United States behind smoking.
Wow. Wow.
And so, for example, these clocks, they put off a decent amount of radon gas individually, but once you have them all together, typically more than 10, they start to produce enough to become kind of noticeable. And noticeable meaning when you're actually monitoring it. Wow. And so the best recommendation I can have is, if you are going to amass a collection, especially of actual radium pieces, and the reason I say actual radium is many of these pieces that are labeled radium don't actually contain radium itself. And so actual radium products will decay heavily. You want to actually store them in an area that is well ventilated. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, my cabinet that's full of, I want to say there's like 90 clocks in wow. there right now. It actually has a custom vent hose in the back to pull air and draw it outside.
Okay. And then once it's out in the outside, it disperses enough so it's no longer a problem, as long as you're not standing at the output.
As long
sucking
as I'm not,
it.
Yeah. Right at the hose. Now, the thing to consider as well is radon gas is natural. So most homes, probably all homes in the US, have some type of radon gas naturally occurring, because it comes from, you know, the earth. It comes from underground. And so in certain areas, especially like in the Midwest, they will actually have radon mitigation systems recommended for houses, mm-hmm. regardless, you know, for safety. It's tough, because there's a lot of misinformation going on right now about radon gas. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But it's just something to take seriously. Is what I can say.
Now, let's say I'm browsing my local antique store and I come across one of these radium products, one of these cones, maybe these giant butt plug looking devices, or a crock, or maybe a tin of Radio-X suppositories. What should I do? I mean, A, I should probably buy it, right? And then if I'm
send it to me.
Right. So, I mean, any safety precautions other than what we've already talked about when buying these?
Yeah. So it kind of jumps back into, why do I wear gloves? I apologize. I didn't really answer that. It's for contamination more than anything. So like if you're going to handle anything that is radioactive, and we're talking sources. So if you find a tin of Radio-X suppositories and there's no suppositories in it, you should be fine. It's one of those things that, unless the actual source is there, typically you're fine. Gloves to handle the source is the recommendation. I follow Princeton University's recommendation for handling of radioactive materials. Simple nitrile gloves. You'll see my comment section does not believe me by any means, but nitrile gloves. Nothing in this category is really hot enough to require like lead shielding or anything like that. So if you come across anything, just kind of common sense precautions. Don't lick it. Don't, you know,
don't stick it in your nose. And then
don't stick it in your nose. Don't pick it up and then, you know, eat chips right after.
Yeah, wash your hands, you filthy animals.
Exactly.
Is soap and water enough if you touch one of these, a good hand washing enough to basically wash away any contamination?
Yes. So soap and water is just kind of the general recommendation. Now, if you are at an antique store and you come across something that is dangerously exposed, so for example, radium clocks, if you come across a radium clock that is flaking like crazy and it's missing its glass, or you can see paint particles, I would highly recommend letting staff know. Now, a lot of the times they're just going to be like, yeah, okay.
Right.
But at least the due diligence, because that stuff is hazardous if ingested, and you don't have to be fooling around to ingest. It can just be airborne.
Sure. Now, before we get into the products themselves, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about the radium craze of the early 20th century. But first, we've got to pay a few bills. We'll be right back after this break. All right, we are back with Radiant Radium. Okay, so it's 1898. Marie and Pierre Curie discover radium. It's rare. It's exciting. Scientists are tripping all over themselves to study this new material. So how did it escape the lab and end up in the drugstore or on the shelves of my local Five and Dime?
Great question. You know, there was such a fascination with the idea of radium, let alone even the kind of curative properties that they assumed it had. And that started with just the idea of, for example, radium was known to destroy tissue. Right. And so Pierre Curie would actually do experiments where he would lay a vial of radium or exposed radium on his forearm and watch it eat the flesh away. Terrifying to think about.
These scientists, man, bless them, they are such wackos sometimes.
All in the name of science, I guess. But that leads into them being able to determine, wow, it could potentially eat away tumors, or it could, you know, abscesses and all these different things that they started considering. And so the public kind of got word of this new substance. It's like, wow, it can kill cancer cells. It can do all these curative, crazy things. It also is warm to the touch. It must be this like miracle God-given cure, you know, element that they found. And what started happening was companies started using the name radium for products that didn't necessarily contain radium, but they used it as a marketing ploy. So, for example, you know how sometimes when you go to, say, a clothing store and they say, hey, the new platinum collection.
Right.
There's no platinum in it, but it's the best of the best. Radium was kind of used in that way. So you would know that this radium brand butter is the best butter you can get. You know?
Okay. I get it.
They were so excited at the idea of this, and they were so proud of the idea of this miracle substance. And this miracle substance, mind you, it took tons and tons, quite literally thousands and thousands of pounds of uranium to process into radium itself. And so it was very valuable, incredibly rare. And so 99% of the products from the radium craze that actually said radium never contained it, which is super interesting.
Wow, but it did actually end up in a lot of products. And knowing, you know, I was reading how much ore they had to process to get like maybe not even a gram of radium. So how does it get out into the public to be used in products, not for scientific research completely?
So at that point, funny enough, there's, like I said, even the products that said that they contained radium in it. So, for example, the radium ore Revigator is probably one of the most famous products, right? They were actually lying. They still did not contain radium, even though they were called radium. So radium itself made it into very, very few products at a very high premium, meaning that people were able to purchase it for, say, for example, Radithor. Radithor is, you know, something we'll get really deep into a little bit later, but it was a patent medicine that contained actual radium in it. Very, very, very tiny amounts of it. And it was incredibly expensive at the time. It was $1 a bottle, which I think today would equate to roughly $30-something a dose, which back then was quite a bit. And because they used so much, let's say you purchase a gram of radium, which at that time would have been, you know, millions of dollars today. It was the most expensive substance in the world.
Yeah, I think I saw something like at the time, $120,000 per gram.
Yes,
in the 1910s, or
incredibly expensive. And so these you know, medical quackery folks that kind of touched on a little bit, they would purchase radium for incredibly high costs, and then they would put it in some products. So there is an emanator, for example, that had refined radium in it, and it cost $290
back
in 1930. And that was the real premium. So realistically, we call it the radium craze, but I have to say probably less than 1% of actual products contained radium.
Well, that's actually a relief. Because I think a lot of people probably are starting to think back, like, what did my grandma and grandpa have in their house that could have been radioactive? And sounds like other than maybe a water jug, it was probably pretty unlikely that yes. there was actually radium in the products, unless they were from maybe a wealthy family.
Yes, they were. There was some radium floating around, but realistically, everything was kind of marketed as radium. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not radioactive, because here's the kicker. They would say it contained radium, but in reality, they would just include uranium ore, because uranium ore naturally decays into radium.
Okay.
So, for example, again, 99% of these products contained uranium. So they are pretty significantly radioactive, but they weren't, you know, this incredibly intense, expensive material at the time. It was more the name than anything.
I'm a big hot dummy, so I really don't know the difference between uranium and radium. Was radium, sounds like it was refined more, so it was more potent, more radioactive. Is that the difference?
Yes. So essentially, radium was discovered as a byproduct of decay of uranium. Intensely, intensely radioactive. And so we're talking like thousands of times more radioactive. Now, what's really interesting is uranium is radioactive, but it's not necessarily as dangerous to come in contact with. You know, it's one of those things where you touch it, nothing's really going to happen. Wash your hands, you're good. Radium, now the real concern is radiation from radium is so intense that, you know, leaving it on your skin for long enough is going to burn holes in you, essentially.
Oh, good grief. Okay. Okay. So, so are people understanding the risks? I mean, at this point, I'm sure it took decades for them to understand the risks, but were the dangers of it known in their 1910s, 1920s?
So what's super interesting is Marie and Pierre Curie and a couple of other scientists, they kind of started to understand the dangers in the sense that you probably shouldn't carry it anymore. You probably shouldn't put it on your arm. You probably shouldn't do those types of things. Now, they continue to do it for science, but the public now, a lot of the public genuinely believed that it was the safest thing you could get your hands on, and it was a miracle. So much so that the American Medical Association had backed the use of radium in many different health products.
Oh, no.
In fact, I actually just today received this amazing piece. Sorry, the viewers can't see it because we're audio only, but I'll send you some pictures of this.
Please.
This is from the Scientific Library of the United States Patent Office. It's titled An Outline of Radium and Its Emanations. And at the very bottom there, accepted by the American Medical Association.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And so this is 1925, and it wasn't something that they were really concerned about, if that kind of answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they wouldn't understand what it was doing to our bodies at a molecular level,
yes,
and what the atoms were punching holes through, like a million teeny tiny atom sized bullets hitting us from that.
I even have some documentation, and it's going to be in the book. It's super interesting. There's shipments of some of these products that were going to different countries. For example, some of these uranium water jugs, they were shipped into Canada around 1925 or 26. And the Canadian Border Patrol essentially refused the shipment, not because it was dangerous or they were worried about it, but because when they measured it, it wasn't radioactive enough to meet their standards.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh. It's so and dark. You have to laugh. Oh, man.
It's so weird. And so it's, I'd like to think that some people were like, is this really safe? Is this, you know, something we should be ingesting, playing with? But in reality, the entire United States, the world, in fact, was so infatuated with it that they couldn't get enough of it.
Well, from what I've read, one of the early stages of radium poisoning is a youthful appearance, a youthful glow, where your skin almost seems to glow and it gets flushed and, you know, you look fabulous for 5 minutes.
So one thing that radiation does, especially radium, is it actually goes in and it kills cells. So radium, kind of the thought process behind a lot of these products was, well, it'll kill cells and it'll rejuvenate other ones. You know, it'll essentially, you know, do a 180. It'll take your old dead cells, get rid of them, and then here's some healthy new radioactive cells that your body looks better, feels better. In fact, radium, when it was used, like actual ingestion of radium, such as Radithor, there was a lot of reports of folks feeling better, especially when it came to like orthopedic ailments. So like, you know, broken arms or arthritis, like rheumatism type stuff. They believe they felt better because radium, the body confuses radium for calcium. And it actually stores radium in the bones like calcium. Oh. And so you may feel really great after you injured your shoulder because the body's like, oh, awesome, more calcium. Let's repair this bone. Meanwhile, it's punching holes in your system with radium.
Jeez, that's dark. Oh, wow. That's craziness. Let's get into the heart of it. Let's talk about some of these products. Now, Yes. You've spoken about clocks. That seems like that's kind of one of the more innocent products that were produced with radioactive materials. And our listeners might be familiar. The most famous story about radium containing clocks was, of course, the radium girls, who we'll talk about in another episode, who were painting faces of timepieces and using their mouth to make a finer point on their paintbrushes, ingesting huge amounts of radium paint. What are some of the other more innocent products containing radioactive materials that you've come across?
So in terms of innocence, you'll find, so radium luminous paint was a huge deal. Like you mentioned with the radium girls, it was discovered by a scientist back in around, I believe it was 1915 or so. And then 1917, it became full production in those clocks. They actually used it in many other things. So for example, some of those old lamp pull chains you would see that have those little acorn little shells on them at the very end to pull you and turn your lamp on. They had radium luminous paint in them. So that way you could see in the dark.
Oh, wow.
They sold radium paint kits that you could paint your house numbers with. Oh. You could paint your doorbell. You could, things you would need to see in the dark, your keyhole, those types of things. Some of the other products, there was these buttons that you could purchase, basically these little stick-on buttons you would just stick around the house on anything you wanted to see in the dark. And then, of course, you know, there was so many products that never actually contained radium. The households were full of them. Housewives loved X-radium dishes, and they were just mineral clay bowls. Oh. You know, nothing super special, but radium really, you know, filled the household in many different, you know, quote, innocent ways. But in terms of actual radioactive materials, it was pretty much limited to paint.
Okay.
Because anything other than that was incredibly expensive to use it in. And you just needed the tiniest amount of radium to activate zinc sulfide to make that paint.
Oh, interesting. So the paint itself, in as long as you're not ingesting it, is fairly safe as long as it's not flaking and it's intact.
Basically, as long as it's intact. Now, anytime you have something in your home that has exposed radium paint, and you're going to love this, there was actually a lot of clocks made back in the mid-century that included exposed radium paint. Mm. And so what a lot of collectors do these days is they actually, if they want to preserve it, is they will paint over it with like almost like an acrylic nail polish type situation.
Okay. To preserve it. Okay.
Yes. And the other part of it too is if you have a radium painted clock and you're really uncomfortable with it, so many different clock repair companies actually offer de-radiuming, don't quote me on that, de-radiuming clocks and different materials. They'll actually do it under respirator and safely dispose of it that way.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Wow. A service that I never thought would be needed. Interesting. Well, David, I'm getting a little thirsty. So I think maybe we should grab a fresh glass of water. And then when we come back from the break, you can tell me about the health benefits of radium water. All right. Welcome back, folks. I'm here with Radiant Radium talking about some of the products in his massive collection of radioactive household items. One of the things that you feature heavily on your YouTube channel and Instagram page is devices for creating radium water at home. Can you tell me a little bit more about these items and what radium water was supposed to do for people?
Absolutely. So radium water first kind of reared its ugly head in the mid-1900s. Was around the time that a lot of radium health springs were being discovered. And radium health springs are all across the world. They're in Canada, they're in the United States, they were in Europe. They were just natural kind of hot springs. And a lot of tests determined that they were full of radioactive material. And basically because there was uranium ore in the water. Now, for whatever reason, people, you know, they went to these hot springs, they felt rejuvenated, they felt really good. But for whatever reason, they kind of thought, well, if it feels good on the outside, it should feel even better on the inside, which is concerning. But radium water was touted as quite literally a cure-all. One of the very first ads for a piece that I have, it's called a Thomas Radium Charging Receptacle. It's the precursor to the most famous radium water jug, the Revigator. It actually ran an ad around 1923, I believe it was, 1922 or 1923. And the headline, I kid you not, is "Suicide? No, drink radium water."
What? Like it's a cure for mental health conditions as well?
Absolutely. They said it would cure thoughts of suicide. They said that it would cure hemorrhoids. It would cure women's troubles. It would cure complaints by children, which was, I'm guessing, your child just being an ass. Like,
I thought that's what brandy was for back then.
Exactly. We transitioned from alcohol to here's some radioactive water. And so it was literally used to quote, cure everything. I mean, they had this laundry list, and I'll send you a picture of a pamphlet. They have a laundry list of, you know, things that they quoted that it cured. It cured lumbago. It cured rheumatism. It cured cancers. Absolutely wild. And that's kind of, you know, where the craze really kind of went a little wacky, because we went from enjoying the thought of radium and thinking, God, I wish I could just have a piece of how exciting it is, to like, I need it in my body.
Yeah, it's like the colloidal silver of its day.
Yes. And what's super interesting, like we mentioned earlier, most of these products contain no radium. So these radium water jugs, these radium water emanators, most of them contained uranium ore, because they, you know, as part of the natural decay chain of uranium, it turns into radium over time. And so they were kind of like, you get your radium one way or another. But luckily, it wasn't quite nearly as potent as pure refined radium. So drinking from these jugs wouldn't necessarily give you the infamous, you know, radium jaw necrosis that people talk about. But you would be ingesting radon gas. And radon gas, like I mentioned, second leading cause of lung cancer in the United States. These pamphlets and articles straight up say you want to ingest your radon gas. Like, that is the best thing you can do for your health. Now, they called it Niton at the time. It was before it was called radon. But they would say Niton is the cure-all to everything. Wow. Natural radioactivity filling your lungs is the best thing that you could do for your body.
Oh, great. And let's be clear, everyone, radon gas is highly carcinogenic. So yes. We know now, if you don't want cancer, don't drink radon
don't
gas.
Do it.
Yeah. Or inhale radon gas.
The few products that did contain radium, even they didn't actually typically have you ingesting refined radium. So I've shown off a couple of emanators on my sites. And by emanators, I mean they were these devices that were intended to release radon gas into your water. Now, the products that contained refined radium released a lot more radon gas, but they also cost so much money that you'd have to be pretty wealthy to afford one of them. It wasn't really until Radithor and a few other products that you were actually ingesting refined radium.
Okay, and we'll get to Radithor here in a bit, but I want to talk a little bit about the cones to put in water. Tell me about those, and that there was different sizes for personal and livestock use. And I want to hear about the granny's doorstop story as well.
Oh, yes, granny's doorstop. So to start it off with cones, I mentioned earlier, Ralph Thomas created the Revigator, the jars. After he left the Revigator company, he made his hundreds of thousands of dollars at the time. He got back into the game by developing a radioactive cone, a radium cone. Again, contained no radium. It was a concrete, like sand mixture, that they stuck essentially a rod of uranium ore inside, and it was encased in concrete. They stamped it at the bottom, Thomas Radioactive Cone, and you would stick it in your water jug and you would let it emanate overnight. So that way you could wake up and have a fresh glass of radon gas with your water.
Yeah.
And there were many knockoff companies. He was the original. He started that pretty early on in the 20s. I want to say around 25 or 26 or so. There was companies, my biggest video to date, like on TikTok, is the Burnett Radioactive Cone, which was a larger cone, came out of Texas. They were kind of copying, doing the exact same thing. But you are very right. They had different sizes. There was 2.5 inch, 4.5 inch, 5.5 inch. And 2.5 inch was typically for travel. You would take that and, you know, go on picnics with it, or, you know, go have dinner and take your cone with you to emanate the water in.
Agree.
The 4.5 inch was typical. You put it in a gallon or two of water. And then the 5.5 inch was typically for livestock. You would actually put it into your animal's water trough and you would emanate radon gas for your animals, because who doesn't want, you know, bacon that, you know, right, grew up on a diet of oats and radioactive water?
Sure, sure. Bacon that glows in the dark a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what's healthy for us must be good for the animals too, right?
Exactly. What's terrifying is some of these cones were purchased and folks would take them and actually put them directly into their water supply. So their wells or their, you know, massive containers of water that the whole town would use. And it's just,
oh,
it's
wow,
absolutely wild. But they thought that it was the safest thing possible. Now, it's funny because there's cones, but they came in all shapes and sizes. You can find emanation discs. You can find emanation squares, emanation like spheres.
Okay.
All these wild things that you use to emanate your water. It's absolutely insane to think about today.
It is, absolutely. And so you found one that was somebody's grandmother was using as their doorstop.
Yes. So I had posted the video of the Burnett cone back in February, I believe it was, on TikTok. And it blew up. It went, you know, millions and millions of views. It did very well. And I was paying attention to the comments one day. And somebody comments and she says, like, are all of these things radioactive? My granny uses one as a doorstop. And she sent a picture of this crocheted cone. I'll send you the picture of this crocheted, like, cone shape. And it's in this, like, purple and green, just crochet pattern. And she apparently had crocheted this thing, like, 10, 15 years ago, because her grandma was using this stone cone looking thing as a doorstop. And they're pretty heavy. They're heavy enough to hold a door for sure. But my first thought is like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, you're messing with me. But then I start thinking, I go, well, that's kind of a weird thing to come up with on the spot.
Yeah.
So I asked her to message me, and her first thing is panic, because she had held it for a significant, you know, amount of time, and it was concerning to her that she, you know, her grandma had this in her possession.
Sure.
And, you know, all these things that was running through her head, right? And so I kind of calm her down a little bit. I let her know, you know, realistically, you probably didn't do any damage to yourself. You're more than welcome to reach out to a physician or anybody to talk about it. They'll tell you kind of the same thing. And so she's in full panic mode. She reaches out to a friend who works in, I believe, radiation at the hospital. And they're like, no, you're fine. You're fine. So she goes to her grandma's house, picks it up, cuts open the crochet, sends a picture or a video to me. And sure enough, it was a radioactive emanator cone. Now, instantly, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, it's wild that these are just out there in people's possessions as, like, completely unknowing.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild. And so, of course, I'm like, well, you know, now that we know what it is, like, if you are scared of it and not comfortable with it, like, I'm happy to take it off your hands. I'll purchase it from you. You know, I'm a collector. Like, it's my interest, you know.
Yeah, you're like kind of a little excited right now. Woo, do it.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, how cool. And so her first thought actually was, you know, this is a stranger from the internet. Yeah, he's very nice, but is this legal? you know, kind of like sure. we talked in the beginning, is this legal to sell? And so she actually consulted with a lawyer. She consulted with her local health department. And to kind of jump back into what we were talking about, the health department had no clue what she was talking about. And they referred her on to the state's radiology department.
Oh, wow.
And so she talked to the state's radiology department and they straight up were like, oh, yeah, we know what it is. It's safe. Just don't, you know, eat it, basically.
Don't put it in your water.
Yeah, don't drink from it. But they confirmed the lawyer was super happy because he was like, this is the coolest thing I've researched in a long time. And everything was legal. Luckily, I travel a decent amount for work. So I was able to go out there and meet her and pick it up. And while I was out there, there was somebody else who was like, hey, guess what? I have one as a paperweight. It never ends. It just makes you wonder, gosh, where are all these pieces in the world?
Yeah.
What are they disguised as right now?
Exactly. You know? Yeah. We'll make sure that there's pictures in the on the website when this comes out so that people can take a look at what a radium cone looks like so that they can see it. Is one in your house that you don't know what it is? Might want to buy it.
If there is, I may want to buy it. You know, let me know. You know, the funny part about it too is so many people are so scared of them, you know, and I understand why. You know, I'll be honest, my video probably didn't help with the scary Geiger counter sounds and all that type of stuff, but for the most part, they're relatively safe. If they are busted up and open and there's exposed, you know, uranium inside of it, you may want to, you know, look at it in a different light. But for the most part, they're not going to hurt you.
Okay. That's good to know. That's a relief. And radium glass in antique stores would be the thing that people would be most likely to encounter, right?
Yes. So uranium glass, and then radium is technically a color descriptor another type of glass. So the actual radioactive stuff is going to be uranium glass. You're going to see it in every antique store. Most everybody's aware of it now. It's extremely popular, extremely overpriced sometimes, but you'll tell. You'll find the glowing UV cabinet. You'll know exactly right. what it is.
Yeah, I was at a friend's house last week and I spotted it right away. I was like, hey, I know what that is.
Yep. And that stuff is honestly totally harmless. Even when it's a little chipped up or scratched up, like don't eat off of it, but you're fine to display it. The uranium is basically binded to the glass at that point.
Okay.
And they used such little amounts in the coloring process of this glass. It's pretty harmless.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Okay. So this is where things are going to take a weird and maybe dark turn. So let's start with the weird first. So in your collection, you have featured some personal care and cosmetic products made with radioactive materials. So tell me about some of these products. And I want to know what the weirdest item that you have encountered is.
Yeah. So when it comes to the weird stuff, it really started getting weird a little later into the craze around the, you know, mid to late 20s, early 30s. People started putting it in things like makeup. So there was this very famous company out of France called Thoradia. Tho being for thorium, radia being for radium. And they actually had a mixture of thorium and radium, both radioactive materials, very little amounts, but in things like their face powders, in their lipsticks, and all these different things. And they basically advertised it as a way to rejuvenate your cells, you know, to give you quite literally a glowing appearance. And it gets even weirder from there. I mean, there was a company in Germany developing a product called Doramad. Doramad was radioactive thorium toothpaste. Oh. And they, same thing, their ads showed basically the little radioactivity cells going in, killing the plaque and making your teeth white again with rejuvenation from thorium. Now, the one everyone loves to talk about, unfortunately, is not radioactive, never was radioactive, is radium condoms.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But radium condoms were just a branding, which is funny because the majority of the radium craze started, you know, to stop that branding towards the end of the 20s and 30s. But this company continued well into the 40s and they put radium right on the corner of the condoms. They actually got investigated by the FTC because the FTC was like, hey, there's no radium in these. You guys are kind of lying. Mm. Even though you're not saying they're radioactive, people get that impression now. But there's other interesting devices. Like I mentioned that the violet ray machine to shock and stimulate, you know, the blood flow of your arms or your legs or whatever, they used radium tipped applicators. So that way, when you were shocking your skin to get the blood flow going, you were also getting a dose of radium.
Oh,
now, one famous thing that those pieces were used for was impotence.
Oh.
And so men, for example, would use it to shock their genitals.
Oh, fun.
And, you know, try to stimulate blood flow, stimulate, you know, some action. The suppositories. Now, the suppositories, as you know, suppositories could be used for a multitude of reasons, but mm-hmm. the advertisement at the time was quite literally for sex problems. So they would basically say, like, is your manhood failing? Shove some radium up your, you know, where.
That'll make it so atomic.
Exactly. And so they got to some really, really weird thing. One of the craziest, not to like jump too far back into radium water again, but around this time in the, you know, late 20s, early 30s was when soda water became a big deal. You know, the Sparklets company, mm-hmm. they were a big, you know, siphon company making these soda water siphons. They specifically made a cartridge full of radon gas that you could make radioactive soda water with.
Oh, how fancy.
It just, you know, went everywhere. This is the same time where, you know, candy and soda shops, they were in love with the idea of radium water and radioactive products, that you could go in to your local candy shop, pay a penny, get a glass of radium water. It's things started getting very weird, you know, kind of later on. But some of the products that I've encountered that are the weirdest, I don't own one and they are pretty hot, but the radioendocrinator is a jockstrap pouch.
What?
With a basically this like little box that has your radioactive sample inside, and you would put it on as a male under your testicles and you would let it irradiate you. Now, my understanding of it, and from talking to a few people who own one, is they are so hot. It was essentially like getting, I think it was 10 to 20 x-rays per hour underneath your testicles.
Wow. So it's actually making you less fertile the longer you wear it, which is probably the opposite effect that they were hoping for.
Essentially. And, you know, you would use it there. You could use it on your back, but it was primarily for things like impotence. Now, the UK, the US did this too, but the UK was really prominent with a product called the Q-Ray, which was a dry compress, an electric dry compress that was filled with uranium, you know, dust. And you would put it on your neck, your legs, wherever hurt, and you would try to apply radioactivity along with heat to your body parts. There was a lot of stuff.
One thing that caught my eye at the, what did we call it again? The ORAU
yes.
website was the radioactive eye applicator that they said would cure your vision problems.
Yeah. People believed that intense radiation to the eyeballs would help things like cataracts and different things like that. Now, what's really scary to think about is a lot of these devices put off alpha radiation. Alpha radiation is the primary decay, or the primary radiation that comes off of radium. Now, your body can pretty much deflect alpha radiation for the most part, because it's so weak that it can't penetrate skin cells. It can't penetrate the dead layer of skin. Well, what's the one area that doesn't have protection like dead skin cells is the eyeballs.
Yeah.
And so alpha radiation can do a lot of damage to eyeballs, unfortunately. So seeing a product like that, and I believe that product came in several different intensities. You could purchase different intensities. It's absolutely wild.
That's craziness. And then there was some sort of NAC plate that you would put in the pack of your cigarettes to make your cigarettes less toxic, I guess.
Yeah, that's something that came out a little later, I want to say in the 80s or 90s, if I remember correctly, much later, which is crazy because radium quackery and radioactive quackery actually continues to this day. And I know we're going to get into that, but it's scary to think about.
Yeah, I was surprised when I was scrolling through the list of products on their site from the 1980s, products to put in your refrigerator or freezer mm-hmm. to help deodorize, from a Japanese company, of course.
Yes.
So, but let's go ahead and take the dark turn now. So let's talk about these radium, I guess, tinctures, patent medicines such as Ratathor. What is it? And why did it become so infamous?
Yeah, so very early on, there was talk of how can we actually ingest radium, which is terrifying to think about now, but they wanted radium in the body, not the ragtag Revigator is what they kind of thought about it at the time. You know, oh yeah, you're drinking radon gas, but where's the actual radium? And so there was a gentleman by the name of William Bailey, and he is actually the one who developed the radioendocrinator, the jock strap. And later on in life, he, after getting run out of most of his companies and, you know, in trouble with many different government agencies, he actually ended up creating Ratathor. Ratathor is a patent medicine, which very rare, by the way, that this was an actual medicine. The majority of the radium craze health products were very, very careful to not ever advertise it as an actual medicine. For example, the water jars and everything were actually advertised as health and beauty products.
Okay.
In a sense. So that way they didn't need physician, you know, prescription referral, anything like that. Ratathor comes in, and I actually have a bottle of it here, and I will send you some pictures of that as well.
Please.
And it says Ratathor certified radioactive water contains radium and mesothorium in triple distilled water.
Well, that triple distilled water is very important.
Yes, make sure very it's important.
As fresh and clean and clear as possible to put radioactive material in. And what's the other ingredient?
Mesothorium? Mesothorium. Yes, that is. So radium, as we know it, is typically radium-226. That is the most common form of radium. Mesothorium is actually radium-228,
okay,
which is way more radioactive.
Oh, great. So it works way better.
It works way better. It actually has a shorter half-life. So the majority of mesothorium that, say, would have been put in there in 1930 to today, fairly undetectable without very, very good equipment.
Okay.
So it was intensely radioactive for a shorter period of time. So what they did was they took this triple distilled water. They basically put these radioactive minerals in it, radium salts, and they dissolved it in there, and it was a 1-bottle to 3-bottle-a-day drink.
Jeez,
and this was something that is infamous because, like I mentioned, it was one of the very few actual medicines that was prescribed. And so the Ratathor company would send a box of 30 to a physician or a pharmacy, and the physician would sell them for $1 a pop, and he would get a kickback.
Great.
That was part of their program. He would get a kickback. And so Ratathor, as opposed to pretty much everything else, was actual ingestion of radium, which is where it gets really, really scary, because you're not really necessarily dealing with the radon gas, the increased cancer risk from radon gas like you would the other products. You're actually ingesting the source itself, which you typically didn't ingest the source in any other products.
There was a person who you speak about quite a bit in your videos that was very into Ratathor and drink many bottles per day. Tell us about him.
Yeah, so his name was Ebenezer, or Eben Byers, and he was a socialite and a golf champion back in the 20s and 30s specifically. Now, he was actually on a trip, and he fell from kind of like this bunk situation in a train, and he injured his shoulder. He went to his doctor, and after multiple failed therapies and different things, the doctor kind of said, well, have you tried Ratathor? You know, it's kind of this cure-all. And what's really interesting is I actually have a Ratathor pamphlet on the way that I'm going to document soon that talks all about how harmless it is and how it can cure quite literally everything.
Wow.
And so this doctor, who was enticed by not only the curative, quote, you know, properties of radium, but also the financial kickback he would get. So he prescribed it to Eben. Eben started taking it. Typically 1 bottle a day is my understanding, is what's kind of documented. He started feeling really good. And the reality is, probably because radium was disguising itself as calcium to the body, storing in his shoulder, storing in his bones, and his bones probably felt a lot better. So he thought, wow, this is really, really good. I feel amazing. I feel rejuvenated. So he increased to 3 bottles a day.
Wow.
For several years. And he was so in love with it, he would purchase it for his girlfriends, for his friends, for acquaintances. He would buy them boxes at a time. And yeah, he was drinking three a day for several years up until point where he had drank about 1,400 bottles accumulated over the course of several years. And he started experiencing, you know, weakness, lethargy, all these different things. And actually his jaw essentially rotted off because of the holes that radium punched into his jawbone.
That's insane. And
to the point of where when the radium industry was really kind of suffering in the early 30s, which is when these health benefits were kind of, you know, looked at with a finer lens. For example, the radium girls had really collapsed a lot of the public trust with radium. Mm-hmm. And so the FTC actually sent a lawyer to meet with Eben because Eben was too weak to travel. And so that way they could get his testimony against Radithor. And they went and met with him. And the lawyer reported that most of Eben's lower jaw had been removed. It had rotted away.
Oh my gosh. And
the majority of his upper jaw as well, aside from about two front teeth. So he was in really, really bad repair by this point. And he ended up passing away in 1932 from this radium illness. Now, it was first reported that he passed from pneumonia. And then I think it was the following day they announced that they were able to test his bones. And they found that he had ingested, you know, X amount of times the safe limit of radium for anybody. And it had essentially rotted him from the inside out.
That's terrible. That's terrible. And his bones remained radioactive for still today, I'm assuming?
Yes. Yeah, they actually were able to test him and his bones were radioactive. They actually buried him in a lead-lined coffin because of the activity. They were essentially, in a way, they kind of described hot to the touch is some terms wow. that I've seen use. Now, what's really interesting is a lot of public pressure came to William Bailey, the creator of Radithor, and he famously said, "I've drank more radium water than anyone in the world, and look at me, I'm doing just fine." Well, he ended up passing away from cancer several years later, and they actually exhumed his body later to test it for radioactivity, and sure enough, his bones were hot as well.
Wow. Wow. And so was this the turning point for the radium craze?
In a lot of ways, yes. So this is what kind of started the collapse of the radium industry as we knew it back then, meaning that the public just kind of was terrified because there was this famous Playboy socialite that passed away from it. Now, realistically, 1,400 bottles is a lot right. of freaking radium and Radithor to drink, but it was still enough to kind of turn the public's opinion. The radium girls also really, really, you know, forced the public opinion a certain way, in a good way. You know, we got, you know, the development of OSHA from the mm-hmm. radium girls. We got, you know, we got essentially the FDA having a lot more oversight over medicines, including patent medicines. Now, what's really interesting is by this point, the U.S. government kind of had to figure out a way to say, oops, you know, we kind of messed up. And the way that they did that is very interesting today, because you would assume that, you know, there would be a lot of very litigious people who would have sued the heck out of these people and collapsed the industry this way and that way and gotten money out of it and shut down corporations. Realistically, what happened was the government just kind of stepped in and said, okay, guys, Revictor company, you know, other radioactive cone companies, knock it off. You're done. And that was it. There was really no lawsuits. There was really no follow-up studies done. We still today don't know the effects of the Revigator or Radithor on other people. It's really kind of buried. It just kind of went away.
Interesting. But
there's an even more interesting aspect to it, which is the naysayers who continued, and the Thomas Radioactive Cone Company, who I mentioned, you know, my book's going to focus on Ralph Thomas. His wife continued the company, sold the company in the late 30s, early 40s, somewhere around there. And that company actually continued producing cones probably up into the 60s.
Wow.
Which is absolutely insane. I actually connected with the family of the second owners of that cone company. And sure enough, they were like, yeah, you know, we remember, you know, Men in Black showing up and confiscating things in the 60s and, you know, telling us that there was no more and we can't, you know, continue to do this and it's bad and blah, 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 blah. But I even told a radioactive story time is what I call it on my channel about a man who was going around selling those intensely hot radium emanators, the Zimmers, to women in Salt Lake City for $1,000 a pop. And he would tell him it would cure everything. And these things had been decommissioned, basically, like they weren't being made anymore. For 40 years, this was in the 1970s.
Wow.
That people were still peddling radium water.
Interesting. And I mean, from what I've seen on your videos and some of the comments, belief that radium and radon gas has health benefits, that belief continues in some parts of the wellness industry today. So tell me about that.
It's scary. Honestly, very scary. There are a handful of folks in the wellness, health and wellness influencer community who tout radium water as still a cure-all. And the reason for that, I think, is a lot less about the actual science behind it and more so just, oh, government bad, you know,
right.
Government bad, government lies, that type of thing, which I can understand to an extent. However, doesn't necessarily mean that radium water is going to cure your hemorrhoids, no matter where you put it.
Right.
And the scary thing is there are some folks with a platform who are convincing people to, hey, go out and purchase a Revigator, fill it up with water and drink it the next day. You're going to feel amazing. It's very, very unnerving and scary. And it's actually caused a major shift in the antique market for these radioactive antiques, which leads me to believe that one day the government could regulate again and say, hey, you know what? These need to be confiscated. These need to be destroyed. Just like they started doing in the 60s and 70s, because here we go. People are using them for their intended purpose, which they were nice enough to give that general license to say, hey, you can collect these, just don't use them. We're now right in a spot where people are looking to purchase them to use them. And I have actually been reached out to on numerous occasions. People like to say, oh, they're trolls. No, I can tell you people are asking to buy these because they want to drink from them. They want to store food in them. They want to, you know, have them around the house so they could lay around them. And it's scary.
It is scary. And why do you think that this resurgence in interest in this as a quack cure has come about again?
I think there's a huge, you know, resurgence of what's really good for you, what's really bad for you. And not to get political by any means, but there's a lot of question of the government right now, mm-hmm. and what their practices are, whether you agree or you disagree, there's question, right? There's concern with things that we've been taught over the years that people say were healthy for you that now all of a sudden, hey, those aren't healthy. Hey, don't take that vaccine. Hey, don't, you know,
sure.
there's a don't lot of question.
Take Tylenol. And you have the head of Health and Human Services saying, don't trust the experts. Do your own research. And unfortunately, when you do your own research, you are led to the internet, which is full of misinformation and people wanting to make money and people peddling lies. I mean, we're right back into snake oil once again.
Exactly.
I mean, this a lot of the supplement industry could be called that because it's highly unregulated. And, you know, a lot of the same claims being made on these supplement bottles of basically being a cure-all without coming right out and saying that they do it. So I can see that. But this is terrifying because this is something that actually can significantly harm you, not just you're spending a lot of money on a supplement that does nothing. You're actually harming yourself.
Exactly. You're bringing increased cancer risk. It's scary to think that people are regressing. And part of the point of Radiant Radium, the channel, is to remind people so that way people don't repeat history. Because, you know, if you don't know it, you're doomed to repeat it.
Sure.
And it's concerning as well, because there's really no evidence to back it up other than claims made by folks who were drinking the water. You know, yeah, you felt great drinking 7 glasses a day of radium water, but you know what? You were drinking 7 glasses a day of water. You were probably very hydrated. You probably mm-hmm. felt good from the hydration, you know, and then later on down the line, yeah, you probably got cancer. You know, yeah. In speaking with one of the families of the manufacturers of some of these devices, guess what? They had a familial history of thyroid cancer, which is very, very unfortunate. And like, I don't know how much more people need to be told that it's not good for you. I mean, you know, there's a couple of influencers who say, well, the government wanted to kill the radium industry because they wanted to harness all the radioactive material for the Manhattan Project. And like that worked for the uranium glass, uranium glaze stories later down the line. But there was starting to be evidence of radium being unhealthy and bad for you in the late 20s. The American Medical Association, who famously accepted a lot of these products, actually kind of turned face later on in the late 20s to say, hey, it's probably not good for you anymore. We don't really recommend this anymore. It wasn't necessarily that like stop, but it was like, we can't recommend this anymore. So they started to know. They started to see the effects of it, especially after the Radium Girls. But it's horrible to think that everything that happened to the Radium Girls, the things that happened to Eben Byers, those types of, you know, stories were kind of throwing, you know, dirt in the face of them and saying, you know what, I'm going to do it anyways. And yeah, it's going to cure me.
You know, it's sad. We know better than history and science, doing your own research, right?
Exactly.
So, talk to the people who live around, you know, Three Mile Island and other, you know, radioactive nuclear disasters, and talk to them about their cancer rates. And say, is radioactive material dangerous? So, well, now that we've gone through the darkness, let's get a little bit back to the light. So people can sell you their radioactive finds, so they can reach out through your channel, right?
Yeah, if they absolutely find anything, or there's a couple different avenues to reach me. You could reach me through TikTok or Instagram through DMs, or you're welcome to email me info@radiantradium.com. Now, I'll be 100% honest with you. I have a lot of stuff. I'm not going to buy every clock. I'm not going to buy every piece of uranium glass. My main focus is the radium health craze. So if you come across a cone, you come across anything labeled radium or radioactive, you're more than welcome to reach out to me. Even if I'm not interested in purchasing, I'm happy to give you the history behind it or an estimate if you want to go and take it somewhere else to sell.
And then is there any product that you don't have in your collection that you want people to keep an eye out for you, that you're itching to get your hands on?
Yes. So my kind of white whale, which there's a couple folks who own them, and maybe down the line money will talk, but my number one thing is a Revigorette, which was made by the Revigator company. I'll send you pictures of that as well. Okay. On the website. They came in either a little stoneware, kind of like a little jug piece, probably, gosh, maybe 2 to 3 inches tall, or it came in Bakelite. There was two versions of it, and it was a face cream jar.
Oh.
And the Revigator company in the late 20s, early 30s, as things kind of slowed down a bit, their Hail Mary was kind of like, okay, let's get out of the water and let's really jump into the, you know, emerging women's, you know, kind of sexual revolution, and women, you know, proudly wearing, you know, lots more makeup and dressing up a little bit more. And so they jumped into face cream.
You know, I did find in research a advertisement for Radior facial cream that was fantastic.
Yes.
So interesting. So you're looking for a jar of remaining of this or packaging from this product?
It was actually its own jar that you added your own face cream into.
Oh, so the jar itself was radioactive. So
yes,
that's
the jar itself is lined.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. All right.
Yeah
definitely send me a picture of that. We'll put it on the website, and then people can help you find that, hopefully. And then, so what's next for you? You've got the book coming out. That's the big next. Any other plans for any other channels?
So things have been going incredibly well on the three platforms I'm on right now. I went from, posting a couple of videos and being like, oh, awesome, I did, you know, 1,000 views here, 1,000 views here, to now, I think as of just a couple of days ago, we're over 60 million views.
Wow, incredible.
It's opened a lot of opportunities. And so what's next, aside from the book, is more podcast appearances. I appreciate you being my first. There's, you know, different media things that I'm looking at talking to. There's a news station that reached out. There's universities that have reached out. And I don't want to speak as somebody, say, like as an actual science major or anything like that, but as a historian and a collector, I'm happy to talk to you about the craze and my experience with it. And the wealth of knowledge doesn't necessarily have to be separated by a degree. You know what I mean?
Right. It's,
there's so much research that I've done, and in a lot of ways I've become, you know, kind of an expert on like the Revigator, for example. And so lots of stuff going on, lots of travel. I'm actually traveling in May to liquidate a collection, which includes even more stuff. It's kind of a teaser for a new video, but I am getting a Q-Ray radium compress, like I mentioned, the electric compress. So that's cool. But yeah, just trucking along, releasing new content, showing off new stuff, and trying to keep it fun and interesting.
Well, where can people find your work so they can keep up to date with what you're up to?
I am on TikTok as @RadiantRadium. Same with Instagram, @RadiantRadium. And YouTube, darn you, whoever has the handle, I am at Radiant.Radium.
Radiant.Radium, okay.
Radiant.Radium. And then, like I mentioned, you know, anybody feel free to reach out to me at info@radiantradium.com. I'm building the website, but the email is live. Whether you have an inquiry, you have a safety concern, you know, collector to collector, you want to start collecting, or you stumbled across a cone in your grandma's, you know, doorway. Right.
So before we go, I do want to ask you, what's your kind of ultimate takeaway from what you've learned through your collection?
You know, people find the most interesting ways to harm themselves.
Don't they know?
In the pursuit of good, because a lot of these products were made to benefit life, whether it was the health products or, for example, there was like the pole chains or the radium clocks. There was an inherently good purpose. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the times it's just a misunderstanding, and why sometimes you should question a lot of the fads and a lot of the newest stuff that comes out, because as humans, we will find any way possible we can to destroy ourselves in the name of good.
Absolutely. I like that. So the message is, think before you fall down that most recent fad.
Yes.
Radiant Radium. I've learned so much today, and I'm practically glowing from the inside out with my excitement over my newfound wealth of knowledge. And I thank you so much for taking the time to answer my questions. And I hope to have you back on again when the book comes out.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. I'll let you know.
You've been listening to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes. We thought maybe you had forgotten. How could you forget? We are your hosts, Shay
and Jody.
And you can find all things on our website, rainydayrabbitholes.com, like sources, notes, pictures, links, whatnot. That beautiful website is designed and managed by the amazing and talented Letha Davis at easybreezy.com. That's easy breezy. EASYBRZY.com. All episodes are edited and produced by me, Shay, and you can reach out with any questions or comments at shay@rainydayrabbitholes.com. That's SHEA. Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and family and stay curious.
See you down the rabbit hole.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.